Okay, here we go. Try again, try again.
You're the Christ. He asked us who he said he was. That's what he said. You're the Christ. You know he rode a donkey into Jerusalem, right? People laying down, a procession of palm leaves for the one we'd all been waiting for. It was like one of those pinch me moments. Then Passover came. Me and the boys are tucking into the flatbread and Jesus just comes out with it. One of you dipping bread in the balsamic's gonna turn me in, he said. Then he takes the bread, tears and shares it. What are you waiting for? Tuck in, he said. This is my body, broken, beaten, bruised, for you. Then he gives thanks and passes round the red. Drink up, he said. This is my blood, poured out for plenty. A bit later, we're up the Mount of Olives with Jesus. You know, when push comes to shove, you're all gonna bail on me, he said. No chance, I said. The rest of the might, I'm not going anywhere, I said. Count on it, he said. Before the night's over, you'll swear blind you don't even know me, he said. On my life, I'll never deny you. I'll die for you, I said. It all happened so fast. 1 minute, we're with Jesus as he's praying up Gethsemane and we're sparked out unconscious. The next, they've got Jesus in handcuffs. And all I can remember is what he said. That we'll bail on him. That we'll deny him. That I'll deny him. I'm not having it, I thought. He's got it wrong, I thought. So I drew out my sword. I gripped my teeth and I let rip. I cut this guy's ear clean off. Come on, let's have it. Enough, Jesus said. He just goes quietly and I just legged it. I tailed him till we ended up at the chief priest's place. Me in the courtyard, outside by the fire, him inside, standing trial. Trial. Witnesses fabricating fake news, trying to pin something on Jesus that would land a death penalty. You got nothing to say, they said. No defense, they said, goaded him. Give it to us straight. Are you the Christ, they said. I am, he said. Enough said, as the guards struck him, stripped him and spat on him. Bang, go on, prophesy you landed that right up, they said. Meantime, I'm warming my hands by the fire, trying to keep a low profile. Although there's only so much blending in you can do when you're watching your best mate and mentor get the living daylights kicked out of him. Hang about. I know you, the servant girl said. Must have one of those faces, I said. No, you're one of his lot from Nazareth, she said. Don't know what you're talking about, love, I said. I made a beeline for the exit, but now she's got a captive audience. Hey, guess who he's friends with, she said. Think she's had a bit too much of the Merlot, I said, but they won't let it go. I could see them eyeballing me, working it out in their head. Come on, mate. If you're not from Galilee, I'll eat my own sandal. On my mother's life, I've not even met the guy. The cockle crows a second time. And that's when I see him. Tossed around like a tear and share flatbread. Broken, beaten, bruised. Just like he said. And with a bottle's worth of red blood smeared across his face, he looks at me. He looks right at me, right into the depths of me. And all I can remember is what I said. I'll never deny you. I'll die for you. 3 times you'll deny me, Pete, he said. And I just broke down and wept.
Okay, well, this Easter Sunday, I've just got one thing that I really want, one thing that I desire, and that's that I want you to come to Jesus this morning. I want you to come to Jesus, whether you would call yourself a Christian or not, whether you're a church person, you've been in church all your life, or whether you've never set foot inside a church building, whatever's going on in your heart and in your life, I want you to come to Jesus. Peter was a man who'd been drawn to Jesus. He was a rough-living, foul-mouthed fisherman, but Jesus called him to a new life, and Peter came. There's so much we can learn from Peter, and this morning, I want to dare you to see something of yourself in him. In the story we just watched, there's two things that can put distance between ourselves and Jesus. You could think of them as two barriers which can prevent you ever coming to Jesus in the first place, or two barriers which, like Peter, could stop you returning to him daily. And the first barrier is called delusion. Delusion. It's there in Peter's words. I'll never deny you. I'll die for you. You know, it sounds brave and heroic, and I'm sure his heart was fully in those words when he said them. Peter is willing to stand up for his friends. And, you know, he's not even just talking the talk. It's not just bravado, because he does pull out a sword and fight for Jesus. But those words also suggest something else in Peter's thinking. They suggest that Jesus needed brave, heroic Peter more than Peter needed Jesus. And that's kind of at the heart of what I mean by this idea of delusion, this idea of I don't need Jesus. It's really easy to think like that. Right from the start of our lives, we strive for this thing that we call independence. You know, we celebrate a baby's first steps because, you know, they're walking on their own. They're doing it by themselves. We train our children to eat by themselves, dress themselves, speak for themselves, because we're trying to prepare them for everything that life is going to throw at them. But here's the truth. None of us can really cope without Jesus. This morning, if you have any thought that you can do it all on your own, any thought that you're brave enough or heroic enough to stand when everyone else fails, well, just let me break it to you. That's delusion. Every one of us needs to come to Jesus. But the second barrier is despair. Despair. And you can kind of think of delusion and despair as like two ends of a seesaw. We'll have all had like times in our lives, times of delusion where we feel invincible, like we can take on the world. Probably those times will have come when we're young, right? But then you have a crushing failure or a damaging disappointment, something that cuts right to the heart of all you were building your life on, something that wounds you deeply. And suddenly that seesaw swings from delusion to despair as reality knocks you for six. Maybe you fail the test and there is no chance to reset. Maybe you speak words to someone which just can't be unsaid. Your relationship breaks down, seems beyond repair. Or you just make a mistake that you can't fix. For Peter, he'd let down the one person who'd really believed in him. Peter was Jesus's closest follower, his trusted friend. But Peter failed, because when it counted the most, Peter denied even knowing Jesus. And as he realized what he'd done, he wept tears of despair. That was his seesaw moment where delusion gave way to despair. You realize you're not that brave, heroic person that you thought you were. Actually, you're a failure. Now, the way I painted that picture, delusion and despair, those can seem extreme, and they are extreme at those crunch points in life, as in Peter's story. But at the same time, most of us will carry delusion or despair or both with us in subtle ways as well. Just areas of our lives, unhelpful relationships, habits that we're unwilling to give over to God, things we're holding on to because we think that we need them. Those are delusions as well. Or a deep down fear or an insecurity or a sense of shame, the sense that at my core, I'm a failure, that I'm dirty, that if someone really saw what I was like, they would run a mile in horror. Well, that's despair as well, just in a different way to Peter. So how is it then that we respond to delusion and despair? How do we respond to delusion and despair? Come to Jesus. Come to Jesus. I'm going to play part two now. So hopefully you pick the right one this time. Here we go. Part two of the story.
The inevitable. Nothing. £3 at the door, our hearts pounding out of our chest. They found our hiding spot. Get down, shut up! We wait for the inevitable. Nothing. False alarm. £3 at the door. Let me in quick, she said. We opened the door and bolted back shut. Mary, what you doing? You're trying to get us killed, we said. He's gone, she said. What do you mean he's gone? I didn't stick around for the answer. I took the bolt off the door and I just bolted. Sprint into the tomb with a million thoughts sprinting through my head. John flies past and beats me there. I catch up and John's just standing there, gobsmacked. The stone was rolled over. I stoop into the place where Jesus' lifeless body lay just hours before. And now it's empty. By the clothes he was buried in, folded up tidy. It was empty. We look at each other, speechless. I mean, could it? Has he done the impossible? The R word? We couldn't even bring ourselves to say it. Are we just being played, I thought? Some kind of sick joke, some trap set by the Romans, rabbis, Pilate, take your pick. We didn't hang around long enough to find out. We legged it back to the hiding spot. The others opened the door and bolted it back shut. And that's just before it happened. You know, the first time. Should have seen our faces. I jumped out of my skin. We told Thomas, he wasn't buying it. Till a week later, it happened again. Should have seen his face. You'd think we'd known better a third time, right? After things settle down, we go back home to Galilee. So we're down Tiberias Sea, right? There's me, Nate, Tom, James, John, the Zebedee boys. It's pitch black. We're 100 yards out, fishermen right in our sweet spot, trying to make a catch, feeling abysmally. Anyway, day's breaking and this randomer is wandering the shore. Any luck, boys, he said. Not a single sardine, we said. Try the other side of the boat, he said. So we cast our nets the other side of the boat, and what do you know? So many fish, not even Matt the tax could count them. It's him, said John. Well, what are we doing faffing about with all this fish, I thought. I dive straight in, splash, head down, swim to shore. I get there, and he's lit up this barbie. How'd you get on with the catch? Any joy, he said. Bring him over here, plenty of room, he said. I look round and see the boys dragging out the water what must have been the biggest catch I'd ever seen. Anyone for breakfast? He said. So there we were. Stuffing our faces with fish sarnies, just staring at him. We knew it was him, though no one dared ask. After breakfast, he asked me if I loved him 3 times. Yes, Lord, I said, as it brought to mind the 3 times I flat out denied him. Look after my sheep, he said. You got it, Lord, I said. He had, you know, done the impossible, risen. One time he asked us who he said he was. "You're the Christ," I said, "the anointed one, the one we'd all been waiting for, the hand-picked rescuer." Still, I didn't see it coming, nor the way it played out. But it was always part of the plan. He came to bear our brokenness to his breaking point, from fully perfect to fully broken to 2 days later fully fixed, so we can be forever fixed in him. Like I said, he'd done the impossible, risen, and there's no denying it. That changes everything.
I do just love Peter's story, because while it is a heartbreaking story of delusion and despair, the reason I love it most is because it shows us even more clearly the kind of person Jesus is. Jesus is the welcoming King, the welcoming King. I just want to think about those two words, just as we close, welcoming and King. And I want to see how those two words, those two things about Jesus answer our despair and our delusion. So first of all, King. Jesus is the King. In fact, he's not just one king. He's the King over all other kings. He's the King who won his crown through his suffering on the cross. He fought a great battle against the three kings of sin, death, and the devil himself. And he beat them all. It is finished. So when Jesus calls you this morning to follow him, he's not shrugging his shoulders and saying, "Hey, you know, here's a nice idea, take it or leave it." He's saying, "I'm the King now. I'm in charge. Follow me." That speaks to our little delusions, doesn't it? Any thought that we have that we don't need Jesus, any area of our life that we think, "Well, I'm keeping hold of that for myself." Well, no, Jesus is King, not me. What Jesus wants is most important, not what I want. While we live in this world, we have the opportunity to surrender everything to him. After all, who wants to pick a fight with the one who fought death and won? Jesus is King, but second, he's welcoming. He's the welcoming King. On Easter Sunday, we celebrate the resurrection, Jesus being physically raised from death to life. That grave is empty. He has risen. But that's only good news because of the kind of person Jesus is, right? Can you imagine if Saddam Hussein or Adolf Hitler or any other cruel tyrant or dictator were raised to life again? We'd all be terrified. That'd be a horrible thing. But Jesus is not a tyrant or a dictator. And Peter's story just shows us that wonderfully. You know, Jesus had clearly warned Peter beforehand what was going to happen, hadn't he? Jesus had said to Peter, "You're going to fail me before the cock crows. You'll deny me three times." And after Jesus returned, he could have easily used those words to keep Peter in his place, to silence his chopsiness, to crush him. A massive once for all, "I told you so. Now do what you're told." But he didn't, because Jesus is not that kind of person. Jesus welcomed Peter. Just for a moment, try and think, if you can, of the person who's hurt you the most. What would it take for you to pick up the phone and call that person? A big effort, right? Really big effort. How about taking that person out for a meal? It's not going to happen, is it? And the idea of fully trusting them again? Impossible. Totally impossible, right? And yet, here's what Jesus does. to Peter, the man who'd denied him three times. He calls Peter, he calls to him. He cooks breakfast for him. And then he basically says to him, that new life I called you to, that purpose that I gave you way back in the fishing boat when you first decided to follow me, it's yours again. I trust you. I'm giving you another chance. Follow me. No hidden conditions, no small print, and no, I told you so. He welcomed Peter. Now look, if Jesus welcomed Peter in his despair, do you really think that he won't welcome you? Guilty, dirty, shameful sinner. He loves to welcome people like you. Broken, flawed, hurting sinner. He loves to welcome people like you. Empty, numb, despairing sinner. He loves to welcome people just like you. Come to Jesus this morning. That maybe you feel distant from God this morning. Maybe you feel your days of joy and closeness to him are all in the past. Maybe you're tired of messing up, or maybe you're tired of being surrounded by messed up people, and you think God's patience with you must be wearing thin. Or maybe you hear others in church talking about what their lives used to be like, how sinful they were before they became a Christian. But you think, well, that doesn't sound like me in the past. That's me right now. Look, come to Jesus this morning. Come to Jesus. He loves to welcome sinners. He died so your sins could be put to death. And he was raised to life so that you could have life. Not just on that one day where you perhaps first decided to put your trust in him, but for every day that you choose and that you have available to walk with him. So this morning, speak to him out loud, perhaps if you're on Zoom on your own, or in your heart, if you'd rather just speak to him quietly in your heart. Give up those delusions and give over your despair. Simply ask him to welcome you and then receive that welcome with joy. Live today in that joy. As we were praying earlier, the joy of Easter Sunday, the joy of that resurrection can be our daily joy as Christians, whatever's going on in our lives. I've got one desire this morning, and that's that I want you to come to Jesus, the welcoming King. However old or young you are, however far from God you feel, or however near to God you feel, come to Jesus, return to Jesus. Live your life with Jesus, the welcoming King. Amen.